Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 398 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Carl Seelbach. Now, Carl is an attorney down in Texas outside of Austin with a very interesting practice in which he defends or works with corporate clients that have the option of opting out of workers' comp and self-insuring, so to speak, which creates a really interesting opportunity and I think has a lot of pluses and some minuses to it. So I really enjoyed exploring that with him. But he's also the co-founder of a company called Scribe.ai. And this is a company that seeks to overturn the video deposition world with the introduction of AI tools to help create an efficient and effective way of doing depositions in this modern legal landscape. So to me, I think it's really fascinating. It addresses a lot of the concerns and issues I had when I was a litigator doing depositions. So without any further delay, let's listen to Carl Seelbach. Carl Seelbach, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. Happy to be here.
Well, it's a thrill to have you with us today. Carl, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, so I am originally from a small town in Northeast Texas, Henderson, Texas. And how did I get to where I am today? Well, that's a long story, but I'll give the really short version to start. So I grew up in Northeast Texas, actually went to college in Northeast Texas at Stephen F. Austin. Had a fairly straight path, went to law school in Houston at South Texas, and ended up marrying my college sweetheart who I'd met at SFA and fell in love not only with her, but also with her hometown of Dripping Springs, Texas. And so after I graduated law school, I got to Dripping Springs as soon as I could, just outside of Austin.
You know, I got to tell you, just, I'm not sure how many states, how many locales could have a city named Dripping Springs and it sound perfectly acceptable.
Well, it certainly didn't used to be on the map. It, when she grew up here, it was a sleepy little town. But over the years, it's become self-proclaimed wedding capital of Texas and has a ton of wedding venues. And then it also started to get more and more popular for some of the distilleries and breweries that are here. So Dripping Springs Vodka, Deep Eddy Vodka is like 2 miles from my house. There's, you know, a whole bunch of different distilleries. And so it's fun. A lot of them are pretty family friendly. They have picnic tables. Some of them even have playgrounds where I can take my kiddos to.
You know, I knew there was growing rationale for why I need to come visit the Austin area, and you've just supplied it.
I will be happy to pick you up. If you decide to come in, I'll pick you up at the airport. I might even have my Cybertruck by then, and I will take you for some Texas barbecue. We can go shoot some guns somewhere. And we'll have a beer or cocktail. So you'll have a true Texas experience.
Well, I tell you what, I'd probably be just as well satisfied with a beer and listening to some of that great Austin music. So we might limit it to that. Tell me, did you always know you wanted to be an attorney, or was law school always on the path, or how did that come to be?
It was definitely always on the path. The only other career that I considered when I was in college was maybe becoming a CPA. And I took some accounting classes and I just found it a little bit boring compared to going like I did political science and a double major in business and accounting, and just decided the attorney route felt more like a natural fit for me. Yeah. You know, when I was a kid growing up, my exposure to attorneys was through my dad. He is not an attorney, but he is a safety expert, and he does expert witness work and has for almost 40 years now. And so I would go into his home office, and as a kid, probably, I don't know, 9 years old, maybe 10. And when he was working on these projects and, you know, pestering him like kids do with their parents, what are you doing? Let's go play. And at one point, he handed me a deposition transcript and said, well, here, read this. This is an interesting case. And it was a pretty gruesome personal injury accident. And he flipped to the pages where, you know, some of the juicy bits were about how the accident happened and how bad the person was hurt. And I just, you know, I was really intrigued as a kid. And so that was probably between that and meeting some of the big personality Northeast Texas attorneys that my dad worked with, that was what really piqued my interest.
Well, there's a lot of those too in the Texas area. A lot of big time personal injury attorneys and, you know, malpractice folks and people larger than life. Some of these firms and their principal partners are, you know, legendary in that part of the country.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And some of them happen to be folks that my dad worked with. And, right. And so I got to meet, you know, some of those folks pretty early on in my career. Some of them had actually had some successes in, I think, the 1980s with some of those big tobacco cases that settled out. But that was neat to get to meet some of those folks, Paul Sadler, Ron Atkinson, also Don Wheeler, although I think he did slightly different type of work, but all really, you know, interesting. And that, yeah, I don't even know if they remember it, but I certainly met them as a kid and was pretty impressed with what they did. And so that's what sparked my interest. And from there, my path was pretty straight, you know, college to law school.
And then out of law school, you go into big law, medium law, straight into solo practice. How did you get to your own firm?
Yeah, you know, it is funny because my first summer in law school, I worked at what then was Williams Bailey, later became Williams Kirker, and it was a plaintiff's firm. And I was on the asbestos docket, and I spent a whole summer there. I loved it. The people were great. I found the work interesting. But somehow I messed around and found my nose in the book enough to get really good grades my first year at South Texas and ended up at the top or top two or three, I think it was top two in the class. And that helped me land what at the time felt like a big money gig at one of these larger law firms as a summer associate and then a full-time associate. So I ended up joining Winstead and worked there all the way until 2015. I made partner there, and I think I made partner in 2014, or maybe it was the beginning of 2015. And so that was a really fun journey. But it's funny because I really enjoyed the plaintiff's work, but I ended up doing defense work. So it's a little interesting how that works out.
Yeah, it does. And oftentimes we find ourselves on the other side of the fence as we progress through our legal career. When did you decide to go out on your own, and what prompted that decision?
So I have always had this entrepreneurial bug, and I've always wanted to start businesses and have started at this point three different businesses myself. And so I knew, it's funny because some of the questions that I was asking when I was getting interviewed, I think this may have been before I joined Winstead, like at the law school campus. I remember two attorneys, Teresa Snyder and Yasmina Tassi, at one point said something like, well, you kind of sound like the type of person who just wants to open their own firm. And of course, you know, I'm interviewing and trying to get hired by one of the larger firms. And, you know, of course I said, no, I want to come work at a firm like this so I can learn and, you know, figure out how to be a lawyer. And but so how did it happen? Well, Trek Doyle is a good friend of mine. He's my law partner now. And I met him in 2008 when I transferred from Winstead's Houston office to their Austin office. And that was the point at which I started doing more and more and more personal injury defense work. And before that, I had been doing just a mix. You know, I really sought out work from a lot of litigation partners, and I was doing commercial litigation, construction litigation, finance and banking litigation, even a little bit of appellate work But when I started doing that personal injury defense work, I found that I just genuinely enjoyed it more. And so what led Trek and me to starting our own firm was we needed to be able to reduce our rates. I mean, it was a very transparent reason. I loved the firm that I was at. People are great. But as we would network and go to trade association meetings and put our name in front of your various, you know, Fortune 500 companies that needed the type of defense attorneys that for the type of work we were doing, we'd often get, you know, in the front door, get a chance to do a pitch, and at the end of the day, just be told, you know, your rates are too high. And so, you know, after hearing that become a theme, you know, a handful of times, we decided, you know, if we're ever going to be able to grow this niche, which was not Winstead's bread and butter, they're known for a lot of other things that they're really great at. But personal injury defense isn't a big group there. At least it wasn't when I was there. If we were ever going to grow that, we just needed to hang out our own shingle, because then we could control the expenses, which allows us to lower the rates.
For sure. And I think that's a really justifiable reason to do what you did, because, you know, at the end of the day, the market that dictates what we do in many cases. So tell us about the firm now. So you and your partner went out, you started your own insurance defense firm, personal injury defense firm. Obviously, you work with carriers and others to provide that support. How have you managed growth, and how has your firm responded to the growth that you've realized?
Yeah, so there's a lot of layers to this. So I'll start with it wasn't easy, and it did not go as planned, and so. Without getting too deep into the story, you know, we left and the clients that we had, one of them came with us, the big one did not. And that was a big lesson, a life lesson, a business lesson. And it also caused this panic, maybe opening it, but it certainly was a painful experience, but it lit a fire. And we certainly had, you know, fire in the belly, so to speak, to go out and get business. And hey, you know, I've got to feed my family. I've got to pay my mortgage. We've got to do this. And so when we first started, I would describe it as scrappy and aggressive and out there shaking every hand we could find to shake. Now, we already had a decent network. I won't say it was an amazing network, but it was a decent network. It was a start. And so anyone who's starting out, you've got to get your name out there. And not only on, you know, nowadays, social media, not that we didn't have social media in 2015, but, you know, certainly more and more prevalent now in 2023. You got to get your name out there, but you also got to be willing to hit the pavement. And whether that's, you know, in today's world, scheduling Zoom meetings or actually going to or flying to some of your contacts for a face-to-face, it's super important. And so we did that, and we were willing to take pretty much anything that walked in the door that looked like it would pay money or return our time investment. And so that was a really fun chapter, because we took a lot of interesting cases and even took plaintiffs' cases as well. We had a lot of hooks in the water, and those eventually are landing bigger and bigger fish. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, nothing screams pressure as does a spouse and a mortgage, and the realization that the big customer client didn't come with us, so now we really have to make this work.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right, and I will also tell you, and I can say this sitting in a comfortable office now with a steady stream of business and wonderful clients, so it's probably easier to say now than I wouldn't have said it back then, you know. Sometimes I wouldn't have ever ended up with 30 plus institutional clients that send us repeat business if I had left with both of those clients that we had before. Yeah. We wouldn't have been as aggressive or been as hungry. And it doesn't mean we wouldn't have grown. I think we would have grown, But I think that that was the catalyst that put everything else into motion.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, one of the things early on is because when we started, I mean, it was Trek and me, and we were working from home for the first couple of months. Then I got, because at my old house, I didn't have an office, and I had a, you know, a little kid, and then a few months later, a baby. I ended up getting an executive suite. And so we did that, you know, for a couple of years before finally getting a small office. But the point of all that was, you know, it really was ground level, right? It was just the two of us. We eventually recruited a former paralegal to come work for us part time because we started to need a little bit of paralegal help. But, you know, it's just been a lot of fun. We've grown it from the two of us plus a part time paralegal that joined us 6 months in, to now a team of 14, about to be 15 attorneys, if we can find another one to hire in January or February, but 14 attorneys and 11 staff members. So it's grown quite a bit.
Now, I know, you know, the answer to this in part, because you said that one of the reasons for starting the firm and your vision was to be able to compete on price and to be effective in the delivery of your services at that price. So technology has to play a role for you. And 2015 and that time frame was, you know, things were just starting to really gain enormous speed and on the technology side of things with respect to law. So what, you know, tell us a little bit about your tech journey and how you incorporated that.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I think there's a couple of things worth sharing with your listeners that helped me and that also I can maybe help them avoid some mistakes, because we certainly have made some along the way as well. The one that I'll mention briefly that I think in hindsight we might have made a mistake on is rates. And what I mean by that is we needed to lower our rate to get the type of work that we wanted. And coincidentally, we actually don't do traditional insurance defense. We do work injury defense in Texas for companies that don't subscribe to workers' comp. Now, we do have a couple of insurance carrier clients that we do some automotive work for and some other type of property and casualty work for. But I'd say about 70% of our business is defending employers in the state of Texas on work injury claims. And what's cool about that is we get to work directly with the client. But
just to be clear on that, for some of our listeners in other jurisdictions, Texas is one of those jurisdictions that does not require businesses to offer workers' comp, right?
That's right. Now, it's not the wild, wild west, so it's not as crazy as it sounds. What happens is these larger companies, mid to large companies, tend to be the ones that take advantage of it the most. And what they do is they put into place an ERISA-compliant injury benefit plan so that if someone is injured on the job without regard to fault, they have basically a system in place so they can take that claim in, they can administer that claim, they have a network of providers, they pay for the benefits, they have wage replacement benefits. Anyway, we don't need to get deep in the weeds on
no,
it,
but the point is... There's a lot to be said for that.
There's a trade-off,
but there's a lot to be said for it. And I can see your point that, you know, some of the larger companies can make that risk assessment and decide that they can provide those essential benefits, for the lack of a better word, services, without having to go through a more, you know, formal, you know, process.
And I can only speak to my clients, and we represent over 30 of these.
Uh-huh.
They are truly, like, I probably wouldn't represent a client if I didn't believe in my heart of heart that they were trying to do right by their workforce, that they were trying to do right by their employees. And so for the one, and that's not to say there aren't bad actors out there. There definitely are that do take advantage, but the ones I work with do a really good job. And the trade-off, as I mentioned earlier, there's a trade-off. By being a quote-unquote non-subscriber or opting out and doing one of these injury benefit plans, they're often referred to as Q-Care plans, qualified compensation alternatives for recovering employees. But the point is, the trade-off is you can be sued for negligence. So that's where our funds...
That's where you come in. Yeah.
Exactly. So we defend them. The companies can typically, you know, there's a couple of things at play. One are mitigating their risk. They're focused on safety. They're also saving money because they're able to manage the medicals and kind of negotiate direct rates with medical providers that are more favorable. And then they can also insure against catastrophic claims, right? If someone has a really bad one, the company's at fault. There's usually insurance that will kick in for something like that. Yeah. But you asked me a tech question, so let me come back to the technology. Yeah,
exactly.
So, sorry to get on a tangent, but the tech piece of this is super important. And so I really think that the technology, the software platforms that we've used, the different things that we've leaned heavily into, it plays a major role in our success as a law firm, so far and into the future as well. And so we were immediately from day one in 2015, cloud-based only and paperless. And when I say paperless, I mean 99.7% paperless. Mm-hmm. I mean, we might print paper if we need to go to an in-person hearing or to an in-person trial, or, you know, rarely nowadays an in-person deposition. Most of those are through Zoom. But, you know, so we were leveraging cloud-based practice management systems from day one at the firm. I had experienced the painful, maybe overstating it, some of the legacy systems at the big firm that I was at.
Yeah.
I felt like were antiquated. And so when I started practicing law in 2006, I've always been a techie. I also, you know, am the founder of a legal tech company, Scribe. And so I've always kind of had that itch and have been very tech forward. And so when I started as a 20-something-year-old associate, I remember a couple months in, I turned to my senior legal secretary and said, "Hey, you know, I think on the next file that comes in, why don't we digitize this file and we can put all of the documents, the pleadings, the correspondence, you know, all the stuff into this document management system that the law firm has." And she looked at me like I was an alien. And she said, "Well, Carl, why would you want to do that? If you need something, you can just let me know and I can go to the file cabinet and I can just pull it for you." And so it took a little bit of convincing, because you don't want to come in as a 20-something-year-old associate and force something on, you know, your staff members. It's not good for the relationship. So I said, "Well, why don't we test it on one case? And I think you're going to like it, because when I do need to ask you for something, rather than go spend time hunting in the Redwell folders, you'll just be able to, in a few keystrokes, pull up the document." And so it took a while to teach quote unquote old dogs new tricks, right?
Kicking and screaming into the tech world.
Yeah, it plays such a big role in it. So that was one thing we did. I mean, it touches, and let me know how deep you want to dive into this, but we've used technology for everything from client relationship management, you know, CRM tools, practice management, obviously. Office 365 for a lot of the standard stuff that most firms operate on. I mean, it's just legal research tools. We tend to lean into, you know, the startups, right? We're not looking at Thomson Reuters and Lexis, although Thomson Reuters acquired the one that we use, CaseDex. So we're always looking for new tools to help us be more efficient.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexaclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's five or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com. Well, what I want to really pivot toward is you just touched on it briefly, and I want to devote the rest of our time here to discussing scribe.ai, because I think that's really unique and it's cutting edge, and you guys are really kind of setting the tone here for some new opportunities. So why don't you describe what scribe.ai is?
Yeah, and briefly touch on the inspiration for it, because what I don't want is any of this to come off as salesy, because it's not my intent. I really kind of want to share the story and also a little bit of the vision of how I think software is changing and will dramatically change what it means to be an attorney and what it means to be a litigator. And so, you know, for me, one thing that's been at the core of both my law firm and now Scribe, S-K-R-I-B-E.ai, it is, for me, one of the things that I really enjoy about the practice of law and the type of law that I do is finding out the truth. Like, I feel that as I talk to people in interviews or young associates or paralegals that we're training, I'm like, look, if you're looking for your why, like, why are we doing what we do? It is to find out the truth of what happened in this case. Whose fault was it? How bad was this person injured? And we need to make an informed recommendation to our client as to the facts, the liability, and their exposure. It's not a win-at-all-cost mentality. It's really not the way we operate. We're helping our clients mitigate risk and do right by their people. And there's going to be legitimate disagreements in that. And so one of the quickest ways to find the truth is to take a lot of depositions. And so in my practice as a personal injury defense attorney, I've taken hundreds of depositions. And I always thought, my gosh, this process is broken. It's too slow. It's too expensive. And it's too hard for me to work with my video of my depositions. And so I kind of just was I'm thinking about it over years and years, and I guess you could even say obsessing about it a little bit. And I'd always think about all the technology we have in the consumer world, you know, the iPhones, all the apps, all the platforms. And I just thought it shouldn't be this expensive and this hard to take a deposition. Like, we should be able to take it cheaper, and as soon as the thing's over, have a transcript, sync to the video, and make it dead simple to create and share video clips. And so that was a big part of the inspiration, was really solving a pain point that I experienced, because, you know, I'd finished one deposition and unless I wanted to pay double or triple to the court reporting agency, I wouldn't see that transcript for 3 weeks, sometimes more, sometimes less, but I'd say average, it'd take about 3 weeks. And if I wanted to share You know, for me, video is just more powerful. It is the most powerful form of testimony evidence. And so I'd always like to share it. I share it with my client, share it with the mediator, share it with the judge or the jury. But I'll tell you what, it used to be a pain to try to create video clips. And so I wanted to solve that with Scribe. And if you can highlight a PDF, you can create a video clip with Scribe. And so that was one of the things that I was trying to fix. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we've set out to do is really, you know, change that industry and give attorneys a way to really involve to capture testimony using modern software.
You know, you really hit on a couple of things that caused me so much angst when I was a litigator. I can remember waking up in the middle of the night just in a cold sweat when I realized, did I book the court reporter
yeah.
position today? Because of the firm that I was at, the individual attorneys booked the court reporters. And I went, oh man, I don't think I did. So I had to really develop some really good relationships with those agencies because it seemed like that was always for me, or more than one time.
Well,
the other thing was, I like you, I never really understood because in an effort to get to the truth, sometimes through the process of the deposition, you learn that either the case didn't have merit, and this is one you wanted to get out of. But I never quite understood then, if that's the case, why did I have to pay for the transcript of it?
That's a good point. That's a good
point. You
know? And that's so what I... Yeah, that's
what
I... Yeah.
What I started doing back when we had, you know, small handheld Sony cameras, I would book the court reporter and I would simultaneously videotape it. And I would say, this is just for my own purposes, for me to create notes. And I would use that if I needed to justify to the partners that I don't think this case has merit to go forward. And that way, you know, we could save a little money and not have to pay for the transcript. Now, you've addressed that problem through modern technology with Scribe AI. Tell us a little bit, how does that work?
So, I mean, you're singing my this is music to my ears, because what you're saying is what we hear from fellow litigators like me who are now customers of Scribe. It's they don't want to pay this outrageous amount to court reporting agencies for a transcript and a record that they may or may not need, right? 99% of cases never see a jury trial. And so why spend all the money on this, you know, video plus stenographer transcript plus all the things that you get charged for? You know, I totaled it up. In founding Scribe and starting that company last year, I pulled invoices from some of the court reporting agencies, names that your listeners would recognize, several national firms, and I tallied it up. And since COVID, the prices have gone through the roof. And what I saw was if you want to take a video deposition with a court reporter, stenographer, it averages in Texas, and it could be more on the East Coast or West Coast, I don't know yet, in Texas, $800 an hour. Now, it doesn't show up like that on their pricing sheet because everything's buried in pay. This is how much we charge by the page. This is how much we charge by exhibit or whatever. But if you add it all up, it was $800 an hour to take a video deposition with a stenographer. So, you know, what we're doing is empowering attorneys to do a modern version of what you used to do with a video camera. And so we currently, what we offer is for remote or hybrid depositions. We don't currently handle in-person depositions, but part of the reason for that is the overwhelming number of depositions now take place online. And so it's about 80% based on the studies that we've seen from some of the national players that have done some surveys on this. So you sign it, it's Zoom powered. We're an official Zoom partner on this. Zoom ISV partner is what it's called. And we actually work kind of hand in hand with some of the Zoom team and our integration. And so you sign on to the Zoom, your witness signs on, everybody signs on, and a Scribe supplies a notary to swear in the witness. And you non-stenographically record that deposition, similar to the way you used to do it with a video camera.
You just answered my question, because I was going to say who administers the oath here, and you just
so
my question.
So currently we have some plans in the future to offer some other things that will help bring down the cost. Our goal is over time to bring our prices down. Okay, so it's the opposite of what's happening in the court reporting industry with court reporting associations. So we have some things on our roadmap that will help us reduce the cost that we currently charge, which is already 50 to 60% less than what a court reporting agency charges. So again, not coming off too salesy, just trying to shoot your listeners straight on there is another way. You don't have to pick between a handheld camcorder and paying one of these national companies through the nose to take a deposition. And so that's kind of, so within, yeah. And here's the beauty of it. Within an hour to two of your deposition, you have a video synced rough transcript that you can read, you can search, you can create a clip just by highlighting the text. You can send that clip to whoever, a team member, a client, put it in your demand letter, whatever, just by creating a URL. So when you highlight it, you get an option to either download the clip or share it. And if you share it, it's just like sharing a YouTube video. It creates a URL. The recipient doesn't have to have an account. They just
and you can share clips too, right?
Yeah, you can share. Yeah, you can.
That's 100%. So important because you. I remember having to, in cases where, witness wasn't available to come to trial, and you had to, provide trial via the transcript of the deposition. Making those clips was just so expensive and time consuming. They never looked quite professional.
Your listeners would think that we rehearsed this, and we honestly didn't. So it's kind of like what you just said pivots into, we have two solutions that we offer for attorneys and legal professionals. One is for depositions, it's called Scribe Live. And so it covers depositions, examinations under oath, recorded statements. It basically, anytime you need to get an official record of the spoken word, you can use Scribe Live to do that. But the other product we offer for attorneys that are listening, or paralegals or legal secretaries or whoever, and your attorney isn't ready to make the, it's not even called a small step towards non-stenographic depositions. And for whatever reason, whether the client dictates it or something else, they're married to their stenographer, aka court reporter. We have another product, a solution called Scribe Library. And so what we're beginning to see, in fact, I have a call with the Dallas law firm CEO next week of about 120 attorney firm. They're looking at using that to upload all of their past depositions. So the way that works is any audio or video file in your case or your matter, you can upload into your Scribe account, and within about 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, you'll have a rough AI transcript synced to the video or audio, and you can do all the things that I described earlier.
Yeah, so, and that's really, really valuable, particularly if you're in the personal injury world. A lot of times you want to cross-reference, testimony from an expert witness. What did you say under these circumstances in a different deposition?
Yeah. It's so fun for impeachment because what I did for, I was getting ready for a trial, but it actually settled the day before. And I was, this was my first time using it. So keep in mind, I'm still managing partner of the firm. I still have a caseload, but I'm the founder. I'm not the CEO, but I'm the founder of the software company. So I'm getting to use this in my practice, as sometimes people call that dog fooding, like your own clinic, eating the dog food. And so one of the most interesting use cases so far, other than some of the obvious ones, like putting video clips in your demand letters, putting them in your, I filed briefs with the court, motions for that have video clips in them now, and putting them in my reports to my clients. Those are all pretty straightforward use cases. The one that I didn't think of until I was preparing for trial was actually putting video clips in my trial witness examination outlines. So what I was doing was I was writing out my bullet points, and some of the questions I'd write verbatim if I wanted to make sure they came out a certain way. And if I thought the witness may go sideways on that point, I would create a Scribe video clip, and I would drop the URL, the link, the hyperlink, right there into my outline, so that if in trial the witness went sideways, I could just click it, boom, it'd open up and it would play the video.
I might still be in litigation if I had some of these tools at my disposal. Carl, tell our audience, what's the best way for them to reach out to you if they want to follow up and find out more about the magic of Scribe.ai or else your law firm specifically?
Well, I'll give you the Scribe email only because it's shorter.
Okay.
It's just easier to type and easier to remember. So the email for me at Scribe is Carl, that's Carl with a K, K-A-R-L, at Scribe, Scribe.ai. And so shoot me an email if you're a listener of the podcast. Happy to give you a discount as well, a courtesy discount, even some credits so you can upload some things and see what Scribe is about. And then the only other tip that I'd mention, because this is a book that helped me a lot when I started my law firm, and I wanted to give him a quick shout out. I'm not the author, but I'm very big on systems at my law firm and on building like processes that can be replicated so that maintain quality and communication. And so I read a book by John Fisher called The Power of a System.
Oh yeah.
And it was a little bit more about plaintiff personal injury, but a lot of the things that he talks about in that book, and I think he has a newer version out.
He does.
It's really applicable to almost any firm, and especially if it's a small or medium sized firm. And it has some really, really great takeaways that are, as an attorney, they resonate a little more than some of these other general purpose business books. So I just wanted to mention that because I know your listeners are a lot of times people thinking about, you know, striking out on their own, or maybe they just recently did and they're looking for ways to sharpen their, you know, their tools and get better. And that book helped me a lot.
I was lucky enough to meet John at Ernie the Attorney, Ernie Svensson's.
Oh, I know Ernie.
Down in New Orleans. And he was kind enough to give me the book. I just pulled it off the shelf here, The Power of a System, How to Build the Injury Law Practice of Your Dreams by John H. Fisher. So very good recommendation. Well, we'll have all of that in our show notes, Carl. And I do want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur. And I hope to, like I said, be down there in Austin checking out the music scene sometime soon. And we'll have to get together for that adult beverage.
Well, I would love to host you and appreciate you inviting me to come on the show.
Thanks so very much for being with us today on The Law Entrepreneur. Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.